Small Biz America. And welcome to Small Biz America here on Biz Talk Radio Network. I am David Wolf, converging with you again for a brain trust of great guests. This week we've got Dean Robinson. He's the CEO of Redmonds. They're a family business advisory firm based in Sydney, Australia. So that's kind of cool. He'll be joining us in just a few minutes. Terry Dunn. She's created an innovative, she's an innovative entrepreneur who's deploying a fascinating new online business model called EcoTripMatch.com. We'll find out more about what she's up to. We'll continue our series, I think this is number three in a four-part series with Matt Pillmore, educator in finance for real estate investors and business owners. He's the founder of VIP Financial Education, and of course, the Small Biz Brain with Gabe Arnold in segment four. Dean Robinson, he's the CEO of Redmonds, a family business advisory firm based in Sydney, Australia. The firm specializing in all facets of financial management, strategic planning, business growth solution creation. Let's learn more about the work they are doing at Redmonds. Dean, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, David.
You have said that there's one key issue that seems so common to many of the family enterprises you've encountered and observed: capacity constraints. What are capacity constraints?
Well, David, it varies on the business, but one of the things that I'm really finding is that every business that I'm coming across this year is facing it. So it might be lack of money, it might be lack of planning, it might be they don't have enough management capability in their business. And really what it boils down to is too many of them are running way too lean.
Wow. So lean, in other words, lack of capacity on all fronts, operationally, the people part of the equation, maybe the equipment side, I'm not sure, and as you say, it varies from business to business. But this is on your radar as you're looking at a business and evaluating how you can help them, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you an example. So I've got a client that works in the commercial cleaning industry, and they had a big opportunity that arose earlier this year. And one of the problems they faced was that, firstly, they didn't have enough skilled staff to actually embrace that opportunity. And secondly, they didn't have enough equipment available to be able to do the work. Now, this opportunity was probably worth about 25% additional revenue to their business. And they have been running too lean for too long. So they've actually missed out on a massive opportunity to not only grow their business, but also propel them into a different stratosphere in their operations.
Yeah, yeah, a different stratosphere. So limited capacity equals limited opportunity in any business, but family businesses are fairly unique. And I'm gathering that at Redmonds, you do specialize in families. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. And I mean, for me, that's the work I love to deal with, because it's nothing like working with the people whose hip pocket is either hurt or helped by whatever decisions they make in their family business.
Right, right. To what extent, Dean, do you counsel around the relationship management, and this falls under staffing challenges, I guess, in a family enterprise? Talk a little bit about what some of the common pitfalls are around these, you know, very intimate relationships in their personal life, and then it folds into the ownership and operation of a business. Talk about that.
Well, one of the most obvious ones that I come across is, particularly when you're dealing with mums and dads in businesses, is actually the way they talk with each other. And for me, what I see is that there is a time sometimes to talk as spouses, and there's a time also to talk as an employer-employee. Mm-hmm. And you need to be able to do that so that you can switch off and you can almost compartmentalize your business life from your family life. Too often what actually happens is men in particular, they become so engrossed in their business that it takes over their life. And, you know, you've got other aspects of your life. You've got a family and you've got other interests that are outside of business. And that's one of the key issues in managing the relationships inside a family business, is making sure that it's not just the business that's all-consuming in that relationship.
And certainly if you're sharing a business and then you come home and you're sharing a life together, in the case of spouses, that can be very challenging, because, you know, if you're married and you're working in different businesses, that's one thing. You can come home and talk and exchange information about what occurred in each of your separate lives. But when there's a tangential or a shared eclipsed interest in a business, and you bring it home, it can just saturate everything. It's so true. When you talk to business owners, how do you counsel them around this stuff? And I don't mean getting into the weeds with it, but what's your process look like as you come in and you look at the different areas that you manage, including this one we just talked about?
Well, one of the things I always say to my family business clients is have a time at the end of the day where you're completely cut off from any discussion about the business. Now, that might be at the dinner table. You might decide once you finish dinner, that's it. You finish for the night. Let's talk about other aspects of our lives. Because, as I said, you become so engrossed in it that you're not allowing your relationship the opportunity to go and foster other interests. And particularly when you've got children, you need to concentrate on those interests as well. So that's one of the conversations I have with my family business clients is saying, listen, you've got to have a switch off point. And often the reason you want to do that as well is that the best ideas that you have for your business are when you're not actually thinking about business.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to spend a little bit of time on financial capacity. It's first on your list and very top of for many business owners altogether. Talk a little bit about what you look for when you take on a new client and how you identify how to help them and then ultimately execute on that.
Yeah, well, David, one of the key issues is around things like overdraft management, whatever their funding requirements are. So, you know, different banks offer different perspectives. So you might be able to set up a finance agreement facility for future equipment purchases. And a lot of businesses don't actually put these facilities in place before they need them. And it's a bit like having a credit card limit on for yourself personally. If you have the finance facility limit in place and then all of a sudden you get this great opportunity to go and tackle some new business, then at least you can go out and not have to worry about borrowing the money because the facility is already in place.
Yeah.
You can just go out and get the right equipment and the right vehicle to go and do it.
You're getting out in front of your opportunity as opposed to reactively trying to chase down capital when you've got a client waiting to place an order and waiting for your green light. That's fascinating. By the way, is the banking environment different in Australia than it is in the States? I mean, that's maybe a dumb question of the day, but I have to ask it.
It is actually it is a very different environment. We have four very large main banks, and they are nationally operated. So whereas the U.S. banking system is, to a point, it's a little fractured depending on the states that you're in.
Right, right. So it's more centralized, and does that represent more of a what I'll call a roadblock for businesses to get the credit they need?
Actually, probably the opposite. It's actually been really good. We didn't suffer the economic crisis that the U.S. did through 2008. To 2012, and what it meant was our banking sector was much stronger and was more willing to lend. Now, our interest rates are a little higher in Australia than what you would pay in the US, but essentially this is a country that's sustained 26 years of continuous economic growth at the moment. We've not had negative growth in that period.
It's so beautiful. At Redmans, by the way, the website, www.redmans, R-E-D-M-A-N-S, just like it sounds, redmans.net.au, Australia-based. Do you work worldwide with the clients that you serve?
Yes, we do. We do have some consultants that we're working with in the U.S., and we're helping them with aspects of their family business as well.
Nice. So back to financial capacity, and you know, we've seen it many times. You've got a business opportunity. They're going to sell a whole lot of widgets to the big box, but yet they don't have the capacity to manufacture the product and deliver on the order. So I guess that's one of the things you tend to see a lot. You mentioned it right away. Anything else around money that we want to talk about in terms of family enterprise?
Well, like I mentioned before, David, one of the issues is around things like overdrafts. And, you know, you've got an issue that I've seen both in the US and in Australia at the moment, where if you are working for a large corporate, quite often you're waiting 60, 90, 120 days to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you want to question the ethics of that sort of behavior from the large corporates is probably a topic for another time. But what I see is that you need to actually set your overdraft facilities up. You need to make sure you've got good cash position in the business. You need to ensure that you're doing some really good cash flow forecasting. And we're in the cycle at the moment with a number of our clients that we're setting their budgets in place for the next financial year, just so they know what they have to not only try and generate in terms of revenue for the business, but where they need extra assistance in their financing in the business.
I've got about 45 seconds as we wind this down. Dean Robinson, our guest from Redmond's, talking about family business enterprises and the work they do to help them. Dean, are your cycles long-term consulting cycles, or is it a quick in and out, or how does that look?
It's usually ongoing, David. A number of our relationships have actually been going for 20 and 30 years, and that's interesting in itself, because what we've been able to do there is actually work with a number of family businesses as they're transitioning to the second generation, which is a fascinating part of their life to be associated with. And even yesterday I was talking with some family business owners. They're in their maybe mid-70s now, and we're talking about how we're transitioning that business to their children.
And nice.
And it's great. It's great how you see that grow.
Dean, so good to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us on the program.
That's my pleasure, David.
Up next, it's Terry Dunn. Don't go away.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Small Biz America.
Our guest on this segment is launching an innovative online travel business with a unique approach to supporting ecotourism. Terry Dunn is our guest. She's launched EcoTripMatch.com to help international travelers, she is the entrepreneur, locate destinations that are eco-friendly and destinations they totally love. Let's find out more about this business and how she's doing it. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hi, glad to be here.
Absolutely. So to lay the groundwork for this, for those of us who may not know, what is ecotourism?
I'm glad you asked, because that is one of the biggest things that people ask. It's actually best defined as responsible travel that conserves the environment and also helps to sustain local communities in those places. And as opposed to some other types of travel, like adventure travel and maybe even regular travel, I guess, there tends to be a component of education. So people who are interested in learning about the nature and local communities that they're visiting.
Wow. So there is sort of some overlapping. I kind of thought that when you first told me about the business, that this isn't strictly about eco. It's really about places you love. There is an eco sort of angle on the destination. Talk to us a little bit about where did this idea come from to create EcoTripMatch.com?
Well, I have a background in biology and environmental education and a few other things. And about 8 years ago, I started bringing groups of people to the tropics, where I had a little bit of a history. And, I heard the conversation so many times from people that they wanted to travel to places, they wanted a particular experience, and it was very difficult to find. So usually what it means is you sort of have either a very specific idea or a vague idea in your mind about what you want to do, and then you end up sitting in front of a computer for hours and hours and hours. And you're looking for not just the place, but, you know, how much of an effort is it to get there? Will you have the stamina to participate in the things that they offer? Will you need immunizations? And that takes a lot of digging. And then from the other side, for all these wonderful conscientious eco-lodge owners and eco-tour company owners, I also watched when a visitor would come and they were not really quite in tune with what that lodge or tour offered. So that made eco owners, I guess you can say, have to bend over backwards to accommodate maybe just one or two people out of a group of 10. So a lot of time is spent on that. And then, of course, that could end up in maybe not the most ideal trip reviews either. So I realized there was this gap. People looking and people offering. And so I wanted to figure out a way to streamline that search. And so what I came up with is a website that allows people to go on there and to answer some of the most typically asked questions. And then they press a button, and up comes some selections that are really good matches for them.
You've just French.
To narrow down the search.
Yes, sorry to step on you. So you've just launched now, as I understand, the website again, www.ecotripmatch.com. That's E-C-O, tripmatch.com, like it sounds. Terry, the Gap solution, so beautiful, so elegant, and so needed, apparently. And it's true, these business owners, it takes a lot of energy to not only get the message out, but to then adapt if someone didn't have it right in terms of preparing for what the experience would be at that destination. And then, as you described the earlier side, the demand side of this equation, people ask a lot of, they have needs, they have specific needs. What are some of the questions that might surprise us that are on your, I'll call it the survey for lack of better, your intake? What kinds of questions come up?
Well, I think that there's all the usual questions you might expect, and that would be, you know, where in the world, and maybe the kind of sort of ecosystem they might be looking for, whether they're looking for a warm beach or they want to go somewhere to one of the poles or something. But then there's also...
Right.
People ask, there's a lot of concerns about stamina, right? So some people really want the high adventure experience. Other people know that they're not going to be capable of that, and so they want to have a sense of what that's like. I also hear a lot about concerns about how to get there. So some people are, you know, they just want to fly in, and less than an hour they will be at that place.
Right.
Other people would not mind at all if they had to hike and take a mule and a dugout canoe to get to, because that's part of the adventure for them.
Right.
And things like health precautions are kind of a big one. So can you just get on the plane and tomorrow go somewhere, or do you need a couple months of making sure you got the right shots and that kind of preparation? So those are the kind of questions that come up with this kind of travel that I'm not sure you know, most people going on to some of the main major sort of travel websites, they, you know, are often just looking for a room and the cost. And beyond that, it doesn't matter. But in this kind of travel, it does matter to people.
What's so fascinating is that you're satisfying a curiosity that people might have about what kind of eco travel they want to do. What should the trip look like? And there's this sort of like discovery thing built into it, not only for the traveler, but I'm guessing also for the business owner that doesn't, maybe they're a little bit clueless about how to get the message out to attract travelers from anywhere. Which brings me to a question. Are most of the seekers of travel U.S.-based, or is it all mixed up and international? What does that look like?
It's pretty mixed up. So, you know, Europeans, that's a, you know, this kind of travel or any kind of travel is big, and certainly North Americans also, and there's probably a smattering kind of around the world. The lodges and tours they have on there are absolutely all over the world. You know, just trying to get those two sides together, and ultimately what that does is that, you know, a lot of these eco business owners have established these places because they want a source of income that can help to conserve the natural areas that are around them and also their local communities. Hmm. And so by drawing more guests and the appropriate guests, they're better able to do that. And then, of course, for the travelers, you know, it gives them a way of having an experience but also knowing that they're kind of giving back.
Wow.
So,
yeah, that exchange of energy. Got about a minute left. What's the biggest surprise for you as the launcher of EcoTrip Match?
I think the biggest surprise maybe shouldn't have been such a surprise, but I have felt so touched by how dedicated all these eco lodge owners and eco tour company owners are. They are truly dedicated to making this work for them and to protecting those areas and those communities that are near them.
Wow. So there really is, how would you say, a commitment to the eco travel idea as expressed by the businesses they've created. Terry Dunn, she's the creator of ecotripmatch.com, just like it sounds. Go on there and find your next exciting destination worldwide. Terry, a brilliant idea. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
Up next, we've got Matt Pillmore with VIP Financial. You'll never manage your money the same. And then behind that, it's the small biz brain. The small biz brain. 30 minutes past the hour.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Small Biz. Small Biz America.
Our guest on this segment is a nationally recognized leading expert speaker and educator in the world of financial education. This, by the way, is our fourth in a series of four segments featuring VIP financial education. Matthew Pillmore is the founder. He joins us on the line. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
You got it. I have a colleague who has called the plight of many Americans in today's we'll call it management of money environment, 20th century sharecroppers. We are all subject to, well, let's just call it the usual way we manage money. Your system unleashes some techniques, methodologies that help free us from the shackles of credit the way we've come to know it and leverage improvement of our own credit into free available cash to build your business or your investments into a cash flow empire. The work you're doing is profoundly important, so so good to have you. By the way, folks, Matthew has made available a wonderful video that is available at www.businessweapons.com. Go there and you can reserve one free session there to learn about the work that he's doing. If you've heard the past three segments we've done, you've got a little taste of what he's up to. So really what we're doing here, Matt Pillmore, is we're beating the banks at their own game.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. We always like to say we're turning the banks against each other. You know, your description of the, you know, traditional approach to managing money just isn't working. And it's not a big surprise. I mentioned in an earlier segment that everybody agrees the bank's rules aren't built for us. So it doesn't take a big stretch to accept there might be a better way of doing things. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're following a non-traditional approach to borrowing. Now, in my early years as an entrepreneur and an investor, I was taught the power of leverage. I do believe that leverage is the single greatest ingredient towards accelerating wealth creation. I do. However, when you follow this philosophy, you end up with a lot of debt. You know, leverage equals debt. One thing that we adopted, just barely scratched the surface of in our previous discussions, yeah, was the idea that there are people who teach the concept of good debt. Now, I understand this because essentially it's borrowing in order to acquire an income stream. And if that income stream exceeds the cost of the money you're borrowing, then somehow that's qualifying that debt as good. And what I'd like the listeners to start considering is that there is no such thing as good debt. That just because the debt exists, that's not the reason for the income. It may have stimulated the initial acquisition of a new revenue stream, but they're not married. They're not tied together. If the debt were to go away, the income would continue. So, you know, the defining difference between, you know, this internal argument that I'm having where I'm saying leverage is amazing and required and needed in order to succeed, but debt is terrible and should be avoided, it's the term of it's how we choose to repay, the terms of repayment. And ultimately that just boils down to our approach to banking. What we've managed to learn is that the useless tools that we rely on in banking, such as checking and savings accounts, these have certain purposes such as convenience and liquidity and supposedly safety, but they're monetarily valueless to us. The dollars and cents the bank is willing to pay for us to use these deposit accounts the way we do is insulting at best. And yet the bank is permitted then to lend out exponentially more than you deposit. Last I heard, that was up to 9 times based on something known as fractional reserve lending, which gives the bank permission on every 10,000 you deposit to relend to other borrowers 90,000. And how much interest do you think they're collecting on that money? In fact, my understanding is that this is where most of the cash or the money in this country is created, is because of fractional reserve lending. So at the end of the day, we're replacing the inadequacies of our deposit accounts through a process known as paycheck, or in the case of real estate investors, rent check parking, where we're putting our money to work for us up to every day of the year, instead of that money sitting idly in a position of unemployment for the 21 to 28 days of the month that the average borrower, average banking customer does. And so that's what we're proactively
doing. Yeah. Sorry to step on you, Matt. I was just going to insert a sort of a conceptual question. Many would argue that, or many might say, well, if interest rate environment was different now and I could earn more on my checking account, does that change the mix? My sense in knowing you and knowing the work you're doing is that's really not fundamental to what you're talking about here. Sure, you might make a few more shekels, you know, in this checking account, which is basically useless and not offering much functionality. But this is deeper than just how much are you earning on your CD in the checking account, right?
Right. Absolutely, it is. You know, again, I would label this as, you know, being accountable to proper budget management. You know, we've been taught to live within our means. We've been taught to ratchet back on lifestyle design. And ultimately, I'm not a subscriber to that. I've been a student of people like Timothy Ferris, who teach the 4-hour work week, where I want lifestyle enhancement. I don't want somebody scolding me every time I want a $4 or $5 coffee, or every time I want to leave the country because the cost of the travel is so expensive. Those are things, in my opinion, that make life worth living. So what we're really talking about that makes this so special and so popular is, how do we avoid the costs in our lives that we downright hate? And the leading expense in that category is interest, even surpassing that of taxes, even surpassing that of insurance. At least selfishly, taxes and insurance get us something. Interest is one of those expenses that will consume a massive percentage of hard-earned dollars. And ultimately, what our education teaches is how to avoid upwards of 70 to 80% of the interest costs that you will pay on business, other non-mortgage related debts, and mortgage debts. So if you were to pull out even a truth in lending statement on a primary residence, you don't have to be a real estate investor, but if you're a homeowner and you look at the cost of your loan over the course of the term you're borrowing,
sure,
you'll remember why you suppressed this document so quickly. And what we're doing is taking all that money and allowing the borrower to keep it. Another unbelievable side effect of that is that you can literally own your own home, own multiple properties in a fraction of the time. Most people were talking substantially under 10 years versus the more traditional 30-year term. And when you are in a position of being free and clear of your own primary residence, much less potentially multiple homes, the idea of fluctuations inside a business become less scary. You have the opportunity in that case to absorb the inevitable volatility that comes with being an entrepreneur. And that's ultimately what we're teaching. Now, you can find out more about that in terms of the specific mathematics, how that paycheck or rent check parking works, how we are applying lump sum payments, how we're replacing traditional checking and savings accounts through what we call debt weapons, by just going to www.businessweapons.com. And we've set up a landing page and a free class for the listeners to participate in. The most important part is really to take advantage of the second piece to the training, which is a free one-on-one 90-minute phone coaching session. And that's where we analyze the individual circumstances of each listener and show you how to apply these tools in your business plan so that you can keep your hard-earned money.
Spectacular work you're doing. Matt Pillmore, VIP Financial. Once again, the website, www.businessweapons.com. Take a look at that instructional video. It talks about cash flow, acquisition pace, safety in the event of emergencies, debt to income ratios, and then of course you can reserve one free session right there to get the financial education that so many of us need to just get through the day, to get through a life and begin to accumulate capital and begin to live. Ultimately, this is all about living a lifestyle, as you said, to have freedom, to have some choices. It's not just about the money. It's about having freedom and choices. Matt, as always, thanks for joining us on the program. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you more.
Thanks so much, David.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
Yes, indeed. It's time for the Small Biz Brain. Joining us as always, the founder of CopywriterToday.net, expert in email marketing, automation, sales, and of course, our recurring guest, the Brain, here on Small Biz America, Gabe Arnold. Gabe, welcome back.
Thanks, David. It's always fun.
Always fun. So what are you thinking about today?
Well, today I was thinking about three really simple things that every single business can do to improve their SEO, their search engine, you know, rankings.
Beautiful.
Because obviously in today's world, if we need something, we, you know, jump on our phone or jump online and we Google instead of, and obviously in the old days, we used to buy Yellow Page ads, which back in the day I spent over $30,000 a year on Yellow Pages, and they used to work.
Wow.
But obviously,
wow,
times have changed. So there's three really easy things that everybody can do. And of course, if they need help, they can reach out to you or I, and we can dig into it more. But if you do these three things on a consistent basis every month, you'll always increase your ranking. You'll get more search traffic, and you'll have a better presence online, which of course will grow your business.
Beautiful.
And the first one is to consistently send out press releases about your company. There's a couple of sites online. There's one called PR Web. There's another called PR Log. Those are ones that people can look up. But I know PR Log does offer a free account where you can do free press releases, and there's actually a lot of services that will help you, you know, do your press releases for free. And basically, you know, anytime you hire somebody new or offer a new service or upgrade or update something, anything at all that's newsworthy, if you take a minute and write a quick press release about that and then distribute it on those sites and you do, you know, one or two a month, those will keep your results high in the search engines. It's a really, you know, simple thing that you can do by taking, you know, 30 minutes to get it out there.
Yeah.
It's something obviously that we help our clients do, but doing that will continue to increase your rank and your search.
And to your point, it does need to be newsworthy, folks. I mean, you don't want to be fabricating stuff that feels thin. I think, right, Gabe, you would agree that, you know, it's got to be news that's news, right? So that it engages people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it should be, if you think about, if you turn on, you know, the local television or you go to CNN.com or you go to Yahoo News or wherever you go, something newsworthy, you know, you can look at what's happening there and you can take that as a model and say, yeah, hiring a new person into a new position is newsworthy for your company, so that's fine. Or, you know, a new partnership that's going on is fine. Just definitely frame it in a newsworthy sense. Don't make it, you know, all advertising. Don't make it something boring. You know, it's important that it is newsworthy because that will actually get some better traction for you.
Okay.
So that's the first thing that's really easy to do, and you just kind of have to train your brain to look for the things that are newsworthy that are happening in your world. The second thing to do is make sure that you are actively updating at least one social media profile, you know, every few days on a daily basis. So if your consumers are hanging out on LinkedIn, then you should be updating, you know, with status updates and sharing articles and writing posts up there, you know, throughout the week. If your consumers are on Facebook, which they probably probably are, since they have huge market share across the world, then make sure that you're posting something on a daily basis there. But wherever your prospective customers are hanging out, make sure that you're posting on social media on a daily basis. And there's tools out there to help you do that, and there's software, and obviously there's things that we offer that would help you do that. But however you do it, make sure that you're posting on social. It give you top of mind, brand awareness, and it also does affect your search results as well.
Beautiful.
And the last thing along the same lines is make sure that you constantly have fresh, useful, relevant information going out on your website. So even if it's just, once a week that you're able to put a blog post up and say, here's a how-to guide on how to solve this problem, or here's my inspirational thought of the week, or, whatever you want to share that would be relevant to your audience. If you're putting fresh new content up on your site, fresh content affects, your search results dramatically. So if somebody, else in your space or in your industry is more diligent about posting fresh content about the topics or the things that your audience would be searching for, they're absolutely going to, end up showing up higher than you, simply because what they're sharing may be more fresh or more relevant. And so search engines take that into consideration when they, when they return those results. So those, those three simple things can really help, they're easy to do. You can do it consistently or at a very low cost if you bring in a partner or reach out to us and we help you with it. But however you get it done, if you do those on a consistent basis, then you'll see, positive results over time.
It's good stuff, and it very much is a discipline. It's a cycle of workflow that you need to maintain. Not easily done. I know from my own experience in the radio space and the other things I do in Capital. Copywritertoday.net is the website to visit for more information about Gabe and his team. You have a large team, and Gabe, this is the stuff that you help your clients with on an ongoing basis, right?
Yep, exactly. We look at, exactly the space that you're trying to get exposure in, how you can market to new customers, how you can remarket to the customers that you already have on your list to increase, the value of those customers. And it's really about providing great value, to your audience and to your marketplace. And the more consistently you do that, the more you're going to, rise to the top.
Yeah, it's a good habit to have in marketing for your business. Gabe, thanks as always. Yeah. Gabe Arnold, the Small Biz Brain. Once again, copywritertoday.net or 888-618-9123. We'll close out with a quick quote. There's nothing wrong with staying small. You can do big things with a small team, says Jason Fried. He's the founder of 37 Signal, and I think that's Basecamp as well. That's a system you guys use over there, Gabe. I know that. That's our show for this week. You can always listen to our show archives on iTunes or biztalkradio.com. We're now live on blogtalkradio.com. That's a huge, huge platform for podcasting, so we're live there. If you like what you hear, give us a smashing review, if you will, on iTunes. We really appreciate you listening and staying with us. Also across our base of affiliates on Biz Talk Radio Network, we hope to expand that. And if you know about our show and would like to hear it in your local market, please call the program director at the station you would like it to appear on. Us to appear on with Small Biz America on this on the Biz Talk Radio Network. If you'd like to be a guest, you can always shoot me an email at guests@smallbizamerica.com. Send your comments, questions, suggestions. You can always send them to me at guests, or you can also send them at david@smallbizamerica.com. I do want to hear from you. I want to know you're out there. Again, you can hear all the archives at iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week in your business. We'll see you next week.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.